Well, hello, my friends, and welcome back. My name is Stephanie Safarian, and you're listening to episode 448 of Sustainable Minimalists. This is a show about eco-friendly and intentional living. And on today's show, we are talking about my absolute favorite thing, besides coffee, besides my children, of course, that goes without saying. My third favorite thing is athleisure. Yes. Oh my gosh. The yoga pants, the stretchy shirts, just so comfortable. I still look sleek. It's flattering. And I'll be honest, I very rarely wear anything other than athleisure these days. And while athleisure as a whole has become a fashion must-have for so many women, it is not, unfortunately, without its environmental problems. First of all, there's the fast fashion model, the constant turnover of products. And that, by the way, plagues the entire fashion industry. But with athleisure in particular, we have to discuss the fact that the fibers that make up our stretchy and water-resistant and wicking leggings, sports bras, shirts, puffer coats, and more, all of that is petroleum-based. Yes, the elastane, the spandex, it's all petroleum-based, aka made from virgin petroleum. And so, of course, there are a host of environmental issues associated with that. But here to talk to me about, number one, what the industry is doing better, and number two, innovations in the fiber industry, is Nancy Taylor. Nancy's resume is long. She's worked at Athleta. She is the founder and creative director of Epoque Evolution. She is now currently the head of design over at Lole Brands, and she has a passion for sustainability. Nancy, I'm so thrilled to talk to you today. How are you?
Hi, Stephanie. I'm great, and I'm excited to be here too.
We're talking about fashion. I'm not the most fashionable person, but we're talking specifically about athleisure. And I have to tell you right off the bat, Nancy, athleisure is so amazing. I started wearing it during the pandemic, and I never changed out of it. Yoga pants all day. I want to start by you telling us, from a designer's perspective, why, in your opinion, is athleisure so darn amazing?
That's a really good question. So I would say that the ease of life in athleisure, and then being able to take those transition moments and have them work for you throughout your day and not have separate wardrobes, is key. I think the comfort and the movement kind of bled over into our everyday life, and the pandemic sped that up for sure. Because we were going from waking up, getting our kids ready, getting on Zoom calls, multiple ones, and then you had to walk away from a meeting, go walk a dog, then you had to go to a class, you had to work out. And so it became a different transition versus getting up, commuting to an office, coming back at the end of the day, your life became more fluid. So I think the ease of that just made sense. And I think from a practicality of not having separate wardrobes, it's less purchases that you have to have. There are items of clothing that work for you in multiple places, not just one.
Hmm. Yeah, athleisure as a subset of fashion, perhaps, is so darn flattering, isn't it? You look put together, or at least I think I look put together, but I'm not trying too hard. I'm always comfortable. And so I feel like athleisure in general can really pivot with me as I go about my days doing all the different things I do. Back in, you know, when you started your career, was the industry prepared for athletic wear to become a staple of daily life? And were you aware that people were going to be wearing this stuff even when they weren't working out?
We were always hoping that they would, but it was an interesting journey. I came from like a couture background and went into the athletic space because I've always been an active person. I loved it. And I think that the female customer was just looking for that. We used to say they used to take the men's one and make it pink, and then it would work for the women. And then all of a sudden, there was this need for women in the athletic space. And then as we were moving about internally with our teams and realizing that it just wasn't the active space that we were looking for, the comfort and ease and movement, that there was a brand extension going into the athleisure space. And we were there at the early days, the early onset of the coin athleisure. I think that was one of the internal verbiage that was used. And then it quickly became a big note. We were able to do a fashion show in New York during Fashion Week. And here was this active brand that kind of came in and did this athleisure component to it. So I think there was a need for it. I think that the customer didn't know what she didn't know. And all of a sudden, she loved it and glommed onto it. But did we know in the early spots when we were really looking at the active space? I don't know. I think there was a hope and a need. And we were a team of women up there designing and Petaluma for Athleta. And along following the same line at the same timeline as Lululemon, and both brands were expanding rapidly. It was an opportunity and I think a need that women wanted.
Well, you mentioned Athleta there. And for my longtime listeners, they have heard me say this multiple times before, but I am a recovering Athleta addict, I would say. Some people go to, I don't know, insert favorite store. My favorite store was always Athleta. Talk to us about the environmental problems that you have personally seen and witnessed in the fashion industry.
I started my first entree into fashion as my own business and working in more couture and bridal. I left that after a very successful run and went up to the athletic apparel space, which again is another passion of mine. And I happened to land the early days at Athleta and had a wonderful ride to see that grow through. I had a lot of extensive travel at that time for all of our vendors and factories. The Gap, again, as a mothership brand, has wonderful compliance and really has walked a great walk along with the industry. And even the best of the best, there was still a lot of practices that weren't aligned with how we look at sustainability today. And there's been a lot of changes and wants to move through that process as the information became more and more available. I left that. I wanted to work in a more sustainable way. I launched my own brand, Epoch Evolution. And that was seated in a responsible umbrella of trying to do things slightly differently. So a minimalist approach, less is more. We produced the majority of our products in Portugal because we had a lot more control over the supply chain and the volume that we had to commit to. So we did lower units. We wanted to produce with sustainable raw materials, and we wanted to absolutely know our partners, which have been amazing partners throughout this journey. And we were very successful with that. Full transparency. You can go into our website today and you can see the factories that we work with, who our partners are, and how we make our choices. We use the term responsible. And we also said we're not 100% right. Like we are doing the best that we can with the decisions that we have now in front of us, but we're always trying to learn and improve and how we go about it. For example, one of our core materials wasn't out of recycled content, but the mill that produced it was fully solar powered. They had a lower energy output, and the recycled water, like all of the ways that they produced it, actually was a little bit more superior than buying the bulk of the fabric in Asia and having it just out of a recycled content and having it shipped across the seas. So we had to look at a lot of challenging questions like, is this going to work with a brand? Is this what the customer wants? Is it going to function for her? And a lot of levers with that. So currently I'm looking at how do we measure our decisions? How do you go about producing and growing a company, because ultimately you won't be a company if you can't grow it and acquire customers. But how do you do it in a responsible way? Part of that is really understanding your inventory planning and not overbuying. So that's one component. The other component are your raw material choices. That's one way of doing it. We do not work with any factories we haven't walked in. We walk in, we meet them, we know who our partners are. We do have compliance about how they work. All the factories are inspected on a regular basis. So those kind of checks and balances help to, they don't ensure 100% transparency and the full part. There's always issues, but we try our best to put up the right depth that will ensure that we're producing things the best that we can do. But from a raw material phase, there's a lot of technology that's happening now. And so we're looking at bio-based synthetics that are not based in a fossil fuel base. There are a lot of ones that are viable and out on the market right now that are coming from corn, sugarcane, again, tree pulp bases. So we are making decisions based on the information we have now. And as we are constantly striving to figure out what are the top choices and asking all the questions, then hopefully we'll be able to maneuver through it in a much better way. The exciting news is that there is a lot of technology that's happening in alternative products, and it's keeping a circular economy in the idea of using byproducts of already processes that are in the system. So for example, you can buy a leather alternative made from apple skins and the byproducts from apples. It's called a peel. It still has to have a little bit of a polymer to hold it together. But when you're looking at, I think it's 75% of the basis being from a bio-based product and only 25% from a synthetic base, it's a great improvement over having it be 100% or looking at some of the practices within the leather industry.
I'm definitely going to pick your brain about those bio-based synthetics that you mentioned there, because I'm interested. And they're always evolving, always changing. There's always something new to report on. But you also make the point, too, that just because it's new and interesting doesn't mean it's better or more sustainable. The numbers have to be there to back up the innovative claim, let's say. I want to just zoom out first before we go there, and I want to get your thoughts on the consumption model, I think, that the fashion industry runs on. Really quick turnover of products. There's not four seasons. There's, I don't even know how many. My favorite fashion retailers, they have new products coming out. I don't know. I don't even think every week would be hyperbole there. And so it seems to me that the problem is way too many products on the side of the producer. Like, we're producing too much stuff. And there's also way too much desire to consume the products on the part of the consumer. I wonder where slow fashion falls into our conversation, if slowing down the production calendar and just producing less. Certainly that's more sustainable, but is it still profitable as somebody who, of course, is in the fashion industry? What are your thoughts there?
Another great loaded question again. I struggle with that. I think that's one of the things that I swirl around in my head at night, and it keeps me up of how to go about that process. I think a lot of it's education, for one. We have to be educated on ourselves. We have to educate the consumer. They have to understand that their dollar white t-shirt that they're buying at a fast fashion discount place that they're going to wear four or five times and throw it away, it comes at a cost. It's not just the $8 that you think is a deal. And there's this like a dopamine thing that kind of hits you of like, oh, I got this deal. It's great. And then you don't really care about it. You dispose of it. It's fascinating too, because somebody had to pick the cotton. Somebody had to process the cotton. Somebody had to take that material and weave it into a fiber. And then once it's into a fiber, it has to be into a fabric. And then when it's from the fabric, it's all the processing that goes through with it. Then it's cut and somebody has to sew that t-shirt. And then once it's sewn, it has to be packaged, it has to be sent to you. And that cost, I guarantee you, is more than $8. So when you look at this approach of the low cost and disposable part, the cost is on the back end to our environment and to us and to our health long term. We need to educate ourselves and we need to educate the consumer. And then how do we change the system of having a profitable company and having it work a little bit slower? I think we have to get ready to pay more money for quality products. So it's a choice of the consumer of choosing to put their dollars, because that's where it's going to change things. Not everyone's going to have a lot of extra money. So then you look at having it be a circular economy of having those stay in the system longer. If they're quality products, they can be sold on a secondhand market. They can be worn again and again. And then I think from marketing, we have to get used to fashion not changing as fast. I think you're starting to see a shift where it used to be there was one set style and everyone had to follow that style. Now it's hodgepodge and a mix. And we have to make bringing in vintage, older pieces, recycled pieces, part of the mix of how we show up and express ourselves. Everyone wants to have this unique expression. It doesn't have to go away and it doesn't have to be new every time. Part of the premise with Epoch is that we had core pieces that you could wear season after season. They were basic colors that you could move in a few fashion colors and a few hits, but you should be able to buy the new products and wear the old products along with it. And I think we need to start looking at that from a consumer point of view as well.
Yeah, you mentioned unique expression there. I have no expression. I'll just say that. I'm wearing two sweatshirts and one's my husband's. I have no expression. However, I would argue that there's no unique expression happening when you just go to your favorite retailer and buy what's new and what's out. Unique expression happens when you can incorporate some vintage stuff that you found in your mom's closet into your wardrobe and mix and match. And so I wonder if that gets lost today on the large scale. I'm sure plenty of people are doing that. But on the large scale, what do? We go to we get an email from our preferred retailers. We see what's new or what's on sale, and then we buy it. There's very actual little opportunity for unique expression. And so I just say that for people who are, again, fashion-minded to consider, because again, I'm wearing my husband's sweatshirt as we talk. I should have put on a nicer shirt, and I apologize for that, Nancy. But we're going to take our sponsor break. When we come back, though, I want to talk about innovations in the textile space. What's happening there? What should we as consumers be looking for? We'll do that after a quick sponsor break. If you've been paying attention, you've likely heard something about gut health and why zoning in on your gut health is so darn important. You need EQ's Daily Women's Microbiome Defense. It's a 3-in-1 capsule that supports your digestive health and promotes gut barrier protection. I started taking EQ's Daily Women's Microbiome Defense because I have a bloating problem, friends. Yes, I do. Inflammation is not my friend. Since taking one capsule a day on an empty stomach with water, I have noticed more energy, improved skin, and here's the big one, reduced bloating. Head to myeq.com and use code SUSTAINABLE for 15% off Equilibria's microbiome defense and so much more. That's myeq.com and use code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. And we're back. Today I'm speaking about my favorite thing, athleisure, with Nancy Taylor. She is the founder and creative director of Epoch Evolution. She's also the head of design over at Lole Brands. And we're at that part of today's conversation, Nancy, where I want to know all about what's happening in the textile space. You mentioned bio-based synthetics. And I must say, as somebody who loves athleisure, there's a big problem with athleisure, and that is that it's made from petroleum-based synthetics, aka plastics, almost all of the time. That's the stuff that makes it breathable, stretchy, waterproof. So take it away. Tell us what's happening in the textile space and what can I, as a lover of athleisure, look for the next time I go to buy.
As I mentioned earlier, there is a lot of great technology that's happening now. The advantages that you do have of the polyesters and the nylons is the ease of movement, and they wear longer as well. So you get a longer lifespan. So there are advantages and this ease and the stretch of movement. So there's part of that we love. And then the other part of it is, you know, the raw materials that it's going through. So what you're seeing now is a whole movement of how can we solve that problem? One of the solves, which to me is not 100% solve, is the use of monofibers. So you don't actually mix the fibers together so they can be recycled again and have a longer life. That gives you a circularity in its use. You'll see brands like Patagonia and their fleeces, their basic ones, they will not add Lycra or spandex to them. They've innovated a mechanical stretch. It's how the fabric itself is woven. so that you get the stretch and ease. And at work, taking a lot of movements ourselves of looking for those options that are not proprietary to Patagonia when they develop them, but they're also an open source network where they're actually innovating and then sharing with the rest of us, you know, and making it viable from a commercial point of view. So that's one way of looking at it, and allows that separation, and you can buy recycled nylon, you can buy recycled polyester, and it keeps it in the systems. The other technology, again, is looking at biodegradable. So allowing these treatments to be biodegradable when you use them. So instead of taking 50 years to break down, there's actually ways where they will decompose in a much shorter time frame. It's not a set time frame. It depends on the fiber. It depends on the fabrication. But there's a lot of innovation going there. And then again, the bio-based technology. So the bio-based technology, a lot of it is from food waste or tree waste or things that are already in the system again, and then taking those and kind of taking that and breaking it down into the same molecular build out that you do from a regular polyester and the regular nylon and bringing it back in. Those processes can be toxic as well, though. So it's not just a set, oh, yes, this is a better choice, because you're using a lot of chemicals and heat and water to remake it into that fiber again. So I'm looking for the information of how to measure it. It's new. There's a lot of it now on the marketplace, and trying to sort through what the best options are, but there is that happening. And I would say water repellency is another one. There used to be, it was a kind of very close to Teflon, but there was a treatment that you would put on all your rainwear, and that would just make the water beat up and go away, which we all love as a function. It's actually quite toxic. So then most countries have banned the initial one, and then we were using C6, which is another type of treatment. And then the recent studies show that's not even great either for the environment and the atmosphere. So now most countries have banned the use of that. I think starting in 2024, that C0 is going to be the new one. So as things and awareness comes about, there are companies and corporations that are working on technology and innovation of how can we provide this service and have the function in it, but not destroy the environment at the same time. So I said the Z0 is probably one of the best examples of that. And we're seeing a lot of innovation and a lot of interest as consumers. If we speak up louder and the request is there, it will actually fund more and more innovation and needs. So those are the things that I encourage everyone to be educated, to speak out, vote with your dollars, and it helps make something that's a technological innovation, and it makes it more viable for everyone to use. As small companies, it's hard. Like when you start out, you want to do everything right, but then can you afford to innovate with a mill? Most of us can't. So we look at leaders like Patagonia, who I have the utmost respect for, where they do there, and then they will open source and allow it for everyone to be able to be used. So the more and more requests we have, or the more onus, or the more people care, then it'll help fund the technology and innovation.
So I have just a couple questions with regard to the textile question. The first is, you mentioned recycled nylon or recycled fibers of any kind. It doesn't have to be nylon. I feel as though there's a large subset of consumers who they're shopping and they see these leggings or this sports bra or whatever it is, and it says it's made with 100% recycled elastane or nylon or whatever it is. They are likely to think this is a lower quality product. It's going to degrade quicker. And I'm not sure if that's an accurate assumption or not. What are your thoughts there?
It's very inaccurate. It's very inaccurate. So again, like the Econil, the nylon, it's from ocean waste. It's from old carpets. They've been able to do that. I was in the early meetings before it became commercially viable of listening to this company. I thought, there's no way they're going to be able to do this. And then fast forward, not only did they do it, there's actually this need and want to do that. So you're taking what's normally trash and then bringing it back in and reusing it again. And that is the idea behind the circular economy. Quality and all the standards, the same standards are there in place. The early years with some of the recycled metals and the zippers, they had a slightly less wear with them. But then fast forward a year and a half or 2 years later, they're 100% the same as the new. So again, believing in the technology and how we go about it. But the idea of the circular economy is so important for us to keep things that are already in the system, reusing them as many times as we can as possible. And that's why the recycled content is very valuable. It's also really important to understand that you want it to be post-consumer waste. The early days of the recycled movement, especially in polyester, a lot of mills were taking water bottles that hadn't been used, because the need and the demand was there, and they were just redoing it in a fiber, which was horrible. So you have to look for the certifications that it is definitely post-consumer waste. It's a used product that was repurposed and brought back into the system and reused again.
So you heard it here first, listeners. A recycled piece of clothing. Let's just take the bra, for example, because it's coming to my mind. A sports bra made with 100% recycled content. It is the same quality, just as good as the sports bra made with 100% virgin plastic. You heard it here first. One more question about textiles for you, though, Nancy, is for my listeners who are just fundamentally opposed to buying items that have petroleum in them. And by the way, if that sounds like you, listeners, I hear that because recent research does find that BPA, so the same BPA that's in the can of your tomato sauce, let's say, the BPA in your synthetic leggings can be absorbed by your skin and enter your bloodstream. So for the listeners who do not want to buy any synthetic clothing, is there a natural fiber that could potentially work in athleisure? And even if, as I'm asking that question, I'm thinking about that Seinfeld episode. Maybe you know it. Maybe somebody knows it, where George Costanza makes all the Yankees wear cotton uniforms. I'll just leave it there. But any natural fiber that could possibly work?
There are alternatives, and I'm smiling because I'm a huge Seinfeld fan. I love organic cotton. I work out in organic cotton. You just have to get used to some sweat marks. I wouldn't be in like a sweaty workout class or ski with them as a base layer. But then wool, there's a lot of natural alternatives. Wool is an amazing fiber. It's antimicrobial by nature. It wicks by nature. And again, some people are sensitive to wool. Then there are tencel versions. And tencel is amazing. It's slightly separated from viscose in that it's from eucalyptus pulp, another pulp that's more sustainable. So again, when you look at some of the cellulose fibers, which viscose, modal, and tencel, I'm getting really technical, I'm so sorry, are, but you want to know, again, what the sustainability are of the raw materials. But tencel is another wonderful product that is used. We do have leggings that are organic cotton, and they're fabulous. If you do it in a dark color, they can perform just as well. Somebody who doesn't wear, there's a lot of great alternatives out there. And there's a new one that is EcoVera, which is similar to a tencel, again, which is a viscose fiber. So there's a lot of alternatives and choices. And if you were to Google them, you'll find brands that are working with them, and they're doing them in leggings. And the natural fibers are amazing. I'm a huge fan of them. I love it. My base layers are generally all wool. I have no issue going into a workout class in organic cotton. I'm a fan of it. And I love tencel. I think it's another great, a lot of my t-shirts are tencel.
It sounds like it's a great time of innovation and evolution in the fashion space. And so I want to just close with one question, and it's really a personal question, and it's about dead stock. Dead stock seems to me to be an easily solvable problem. And I say that from my soapbox, who has never, ever done anything in the fashion industry. But could we talk about dead stock for a minute? Maybe perhaps you can define it for my listeners, but then tell me what your thoughts are with reducing dead stock, using dead stock. Again, it seems like such a easily solvable problem.
It is, but it's challenging. It is so challenging to solve that problem. And I think it's tools and processes. Like if we could develop the tools and processes to make it accessible to the resources that need it. So dead stock is like in a high volume company, you have a minimum that you need to buy into. So it would be a general 3,000 meters of any fabric you're going to. And in your consumption, in your orders, you may only produce into 2,200. So there's 800 meters of that leftover. You're going to pay a surcharge if you don't use it, but generally it's cheaper to just buy the 3,000 and those 800 meters either sit there or you hope to use it for future seasons. And if you can't use it, it stockpiles and it sits at the factory. And a lot of companies will try to figure out ways. Again, if the profit's really high, it'll just sit there and it's not recycled or used back. They don't necessarily want to share it with other brands because it is their proprietary fabric or their own color. And so there becomes a barrier with that too. The early days of Epoch, we used a lot of dead stock. We would travel down to LA. I would put it in the back of my SUV and I would pick pieces and we made it locally in San Francisco in a factory. And we would do these small runs that were unique. The customer, we would say, hey, we're doing 100 or 150 pieces. This is all the fabric there is. This is a unique run and they would sell out. That is a great way to do it. There are very few companies, or I'm lucky enough to live on the West Coast where I do have access to that and I can go down in the LA Fashion District and I can buy that. There is a bigger problem that's systemic. And so if we start wanting to choose to do that from a smaller brand, if I could produce smaller units in this country that has the 800 units and we made it as a viable business model, there has to be profitability put into it, then we could use that. There, I think I read a quote, now, I don't know if this is true or not, but they say that there's already enough fabrics and fiber out there to feed the fashion industry like for the next 10 years. And my guess is there probably is. And we need somebody to innovate and solve how you can get it out of a warehouse and then bring it into companies that really need it. And I could say when I started, I came from a very large company where minimums weren't an issue. We could move production around. And then when I first started, I didn't want to produce a lot of units. And I still don't want to produce a lot of units. That's one of our number one stumbling blocks is buying the raw materials in the smaller quantities and then finding factories that will produce profitably smaller units.
So is the problem the size? If we're selling on a smaller scale, if we're a smaller company and we're producing less, we have to then buy less fabric and we won't have as much dead stock? Is that what you're saying?
It's just the way the industry works. So yes, if mills could be more flexible, it's a pricing structure model because the mill needs to produce 3,000 meters for them to be profitable to sell it to you at that price. And the way they run the machines and how the system is set up. So we fundamentally need to change the way the system is set up. European models are set up where it's smaller. They have controlled dye lots. You can buy 80 meters. The cost is much more higher. And then I would say that the overseas model, and even in LA, the model is set up that the higher the volume, the more profitable it is when they set up the systems. And it's the same way when they manufacture your clothes. If they're making 10,000 units of the same, they can go a lot faster and they can give you a cheaper price. So the pricing model comes lower. And then if you switch it up or they're going to do 1,000, it's not profitable for them at that price. So then they go away or the consumer doesn't want to pay more money for that product. So it's a systemic problem and it's a consumer education problem as well, and how we consume and how we want the lowest price possible.
Yeah. It always comes back to profit, doesn't it? It's the system that's the problem. The system was created for maximum profit. Well, Nancy, I really enjoyed our conversation. You gave me an awful lot to think about. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, too. It was great to be here.
Listeners, that's a wrap, my friends. Show notes are at mamaminimalist.com/448. A few quick housekeeping issues before we say goodbye. Number one, I haven't had an eco tip in a while because nobody's been emailing me their eco tip. So if you have one, it doesn't matter how silly you think it is. If you are doing something eco-friendly in your life and you think it might help just one other person, please send me an email and I'll add it into the reinvigorated eco tip section of our show. My email's in this week's show notes. Housekeeping issue number two, of course, is if you love the show, please consider reviewing it. And as I say that, I know I sound like a broken record, but if you like it, review it. Even if you don't like it, you can still review it. And thank you so much, because guess what? I know how many of you listen each week. I know the numbers. A very small fraction of you have actually taken the 10 seconds to review. And while you're leaving the show review, go ahead and leave all your favorite shows reviews, specifically the shows by independent creators, so they don't have a big media conglomerate behind them, or they're not an influencer with a gigantic following. If you follow a show, so like a small show, we talked a little bit about slow fashion and small fashion. Is bigness the problem in the fashion industry? If you're following any small creators, make sure you leave their shows reviews as well. Make sure you're sharing their content. Make sure you're telling your friends about them. Because guess what? It's hard for the little guys out there in all industries. So thank you so much for helping out us little guys and girls. We'll be back tomorrow for headlines. I will see you then. I need to hear from you guys. I'm feeling disconnected. I'm feeling like I'm speaking into a microphone in the closet in my basement. And I definitely am doing that, but I need some connection. So reach out, just say hi. You don't even have to have anything to say. Just say, hey, I'd appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow for headlines, and take care.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.